So at first, we somehow or other come into contact with the mercy of the Vaishnava. Brahmanda Brahminte Kuna Bhagyavana Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadapaya Bhakti Lata Beach. So many lifetimes, life after life, we are moving throughout the universe. Sometimes uparya da, sometimes upwards, sometimes downwards. That is the nature of material life. Sometimes going down into the lower species of life, forgetting our current human conditions completely and acting only upon the instincts in the animal species or even in the non-moving species. And in this way, life after life. But then suddenly, our life becomes bhagya, becomes auspicious by the association of the devotee. Just like Srila Prabhupada said that, I created your piety. Prabhupada came and created our piety by emanating transcendental sound vibration. Prabhupada had great faith in the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, and as such, he was convinced that as long as the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is somehow or other transmitted, then surely everything will be successful. And he even had faith in the recording of the holy name. It was a very revolutionary thing that he recorded Vedic mantra. At first he made that little single disc which was made in America with just the Maha Mantra. And that was inconceivable. How can one... isn't the Vedic mantra supposed to be spoken? No. It is the name of the Lord. And even if that name echoes, that echo also acts. It also acts. In one sense, a recording is an echo of a real sound, one can say. And it is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Echo that when Sukadev Goswami had left, Vyasadev was calling out his name and the trees were echoing. And that was also counting as the bhav of the trees. In the same way, Haridas Thakur describes that when the holy name is chanted and the echo of that name, which is echoing of the trees, is the chanting of the trees. And even that echo is full of transcendental potency. Srila Prabhupada had full faith in the holy name, and therefore he knew that the holy name will cause a transformation. It is said, Janataka Viplavo, it will create a revolution in an otherwise sinful society. That is what happened. Not due to any of our own credits, not due to any of our own endeavors. We were endeavoring, some of us even endeavoring for some increase of spirituality in our life. But such endeavors cannot bring any permanent fruit. Then still, talabhyate upariyada. Then still one will attain sometimes a higher destination, sometimes a lower destination, because one can never on his own come to Krishna. That is not possible. Pantas tukoti satavatsara sampragam yuvayora tapi manasu munipungavanam supyasti yat prapadi chintya bi chintya tatve govindamari purisham tamaham bhajame. Not by some process of where we on our own accord, through following some discipline, such as, for example, a yogic process by controlling the breath and so on, can one ever elevate himself to the point where he can touch the tip of the toe of the Lord? That is not possible. That is only possible through mercy, not through some ascending process of self-elevation. That won't work. It is only possible through mercy, and by taking shelter of that mercy. The mercy of the Supreme Lord is coming through the devotees, coming through the scriptures, coming through the name of the Lord. And by always taking shelter of the devotees, of the name of the Lord, of the scriptures, or of the deity of the Lord, and then I may as well mention the Holy Dham also, then I have the five principal limbs of bhakti. There specifically, the mercy of the Lord is manifest. The mercy of the Lord may also be manifest in other places. For example, places where the Lord has traversed this planet. Like, for example, Krishna traveled from Vrindavan, Mathura, and then towards Dwarka. So that's a long way. So he obviously came through a whole tract of land. And that whole tract of land obviously is a place of pilgrimage. That particular route is blessed by Krishna. So that's not an ordinary route. In that way, the Lord creates tirthas. He creates holy places on this planet. And a Vaishnava also creates tirthas. Tumkin Square Park, Srila Prabhupada, or Bhaktivedanta Manor, the lawn where Srila Prabhupada would sit, or just the manor as a whole. A tirtha, right? A place which, besides that the Lord is manifest here and manifests his transcendental abode, also a place that has been graced by the pure devotee and thus has become invested with transcendental potency. The living being, either by the premeditated plan of the pure devotee or by accident, stumbles over the mercy of the Lord. We may recall the story that Prahlad Maharaj in a previous life was not such a pious personality, and that in fact he had fallen prey to illicit activity, and that on one particular day he had an arrangement to meet up with some prostitute in a secluded place, which happened to be in the forest. And they came to the forest to an abandoned temple of Lord Nrisingadev. And in order to enjoy, along with the girl, they made arrangements to clean that place. And they were cleaning the temple of Lord Nrisingadev. And it happened to be that while they were doing that it was Nrisinga Chaturdasi. So that service even counted as more. And it is said, for that, in the next life, he came, became the great devotee Prahlad. Of course, not on his own, not just from birth, but rather by the grace and mercy of Narada Muni, who instructed his mother while he was still in the womb. And these instructions, his mother heard them, but they didn't really touch her so deeply, but the child in the womb, because of his previous connection with accidental devotional service, was very susceptible to this transcendental knowledge and took it to heart. And then by very seriously taking up the process. So not just by the mercy, but by then taking that mercy and going to work with that mercy himself, did he become the great transcendental personality that is described here. The personality who, sometimes feeling the touch of the Lord's lotus hands, he became spiritually jubilant and remained silent, his hair standing on end and tears gliding down from his half-closed eyes because of his love for the Lord. That is Prahlad. Prahlad was very young, but still Prahlad was a pure devotee. So you cannot think, oh, I'm too young. No. That you cannot think, because Prahlad didn't think like, I'm too young to be a pure devotee. Just see. Like this, at any time, at any time, one can come to this platform of pure devotional service. It depends on our input, our degree of surrender. We may recall in the Bhagavatam the reference to Katvanga Maharaj. That reference of Katvanga Maharaj stands as the proof that devotional service doesn't have to be a gradual process, but rather that simply in a moment one can surrender, because Katvanga Maharaj was pious, he was powerful, it was a different yuga. He had fought side by side with the demigods to protect their interests in their eternal ongoing battle with the Asuras, and therefore he received blessings from Indra, and they asked him, what would you like? And he said, I would like to know how much more time I have to live. And the demigod said, only a moment. And right there, in that moment, he let go. He let go of all his material dreams. He let go of all his material acquisitions, his position, his everything that he required, everything that he ever had claimed as his property. He let go of all that. Not only his physical property in the sense of his home and his vehicles and all the other possessions, but even his intellectual property, the power of his intelligence, this is my intelligence, and all the other abilities he had. He just let go and simply took a humble position and said, I am the servant of Krishna. And right then and there, he came to the platform of perfection. So the story of Katvanga Maharaj stands to testify that it is possible to advance very rapidly, and that it is a matter of one's surrender, the degree that one surrenders. However, because it is difficult to surrender, and attachment is so deep, attachment to material identification is so deep, it is so difficult not to be on the bodily platform, even with the highest philosophical concepts, at least theoretically understood, and 5 minutes later we act on the bodily platform. It is just amazing. We can quote the deepest sloka and give a huge explanation of Srimad Bhagavatam, and whew, we become overwhelmed by bodily identification. And we suddenly take the dictates of the material body serious. My senses want. I want. It's, instead of thinking my senses want, we think, I want. This is my desire. But the truth of the matter is that it is simply the senses. The senses want. The senses are dictating. And we identify with it. It's the body. Sex desire is built in, wired in into the body. What has it? It doesn't arise from the soul. It is an impulse that comes from the body. And then it comes from the gross body, and then these impulses are also stored within the subtle body. That means within our mind. So we remember them. And therefore sometimes the remembrance also comes in the mind. And I think, this is my desire. This is what I want. No. This is what the body is dictating to me. Right? This is what the subtle body and the gross body are dictating to me. And I say, yes. Yes. Whatever you say, yes. I am your surrendered soldier. You know, like, yes, your order is my command. Yes, whatever you say, yes. And we salute. Kamadinam kutida pulita duni desam tesam jatanimi na karuna na taputraya. But it says the senses have no mercy. We salute and follow their demands faithfully, and they keep on driving us and are never satisfied. You bring everything you can. Is that all? Bring more. Thankless taskmasters. And yet we are faithfully continuing. Well, we have our moments. We have our moments that we think, this is too much. I can no longer just do this. This materialism. And these are the moments that we think, yes, I want spiritual life. I want it. And then we renounce the material world. But as we are getting frustrated in sense enjoyment, in bhog, then there is tyag, renunciation. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami describes the dynamics of bhog and tyag. When we have bhog, sense enjoyment, then after a while, frustrated, we want to renounce. And when we renounce, then after a while, then we are so renounced, and all we can think of is sense enjoyment. And this is the position. We go up and down. And then we give in to that sense enjoyment for a while. And again, we suffer, again frustrated. And again, we start to think, no, I want to give it up. I really want to give it up. And again, I'm going to get more serious about my spiritual life. And, you know, it's like, I mean, I'm going to go to Mongol Arctic tomorrow. And like this, up and down, up and down, up and down in our spiritual practices. And this stage is the stage where we are in the slow lane, where progress is very gradual, little by little, increase. Little by little, the remembrance of Krishna is entering into our consciousness, and it's taking hold. Oh yes, Maya is sweet, but how can I forget Gokulananda? How can I forget them? I cannot. No, not possible. But when we lack in purity, and when we lack in commitment of being a servant, when we lack in making a commitment of really being the servant and saying, Krishna, my life is yours, and therefore I make the adjustments according to your desire in my life, and I will behave as you have written in or revealed it in your scriptures. But because we are lacking in that, nisidachar, we are lacking in following the scriptural injunctions. So this nisida achar is one of the stumbling blocks. And as a result, we bang into a wall. And we just, the stumbling block is like a wall. It is just like a wall. And we try, and it's just like bang against this, again this wall. Because we are slack, nisida achar. We are slack in taking shelter of the behavior that Krishna desires us to follow. Yes. The process of Bhakti Yoga, such as it is outlined in 64 different aspects, that process is engaging the senses and the mind. It is designed in such a way that at all times the senses and mind can be engaged in the service of the Lord. And if we surrender to that, then we have to conquer the mind, and through the mind control the senses. Because the mind, of course, doesn't want. The mind says, oh, this is too much work. This is too difficult. The mind says, I'm missing out. There are so many other opportunities. Summertime. Yes. And now, and everyone is enjoying except us. Yeah. Sometimes I speak of the book distributor who is full of compassion, who finds himself in the street carrying his books around and sees all these people sitting, men and women mixing, sitting there with nice drinks on nice terraces. And for a moment, that book distributor may feel sorry for himself. So it is very difficult to overcome the mind. We may be on an ecstatic Harinam, going right there through Oxford Street, past all the shops. And while we are chanting the holy name, the eyes are window shopping. And say, wow, that looks good. I'll go back later to that shop and check it out. So, yes, Maya is very subtle and also present in the middle of our devotional activity. It's not so simple that we can just say, either I'm dressed in jeans and t-shirt and I'm part of the material world and I just change that dress and put lots of big neck beads and, you know, like even holy names carved in leaves from the ones you buy at Radha Kund, and I'll get tilak tattooed on my body so that it never goes off, and, you know, kavacha here, kavacha there, a pavitra, and, you know, I've got the strings from the last six abhishekhs still around my wrist. And at home, there is a horse's hoof hanging on the door just to make sure that everything is lucky, that Lakshmi Devi is favorable, and everything is lined up. But that's still not enough. It's still not enough. It is just amazing, how much, in the middle of Krishna conscious activity, material thoughts can come, and sometimes outright degraded ones. And how that can happen? How that can happen? Even while standing in front of the deities, sinful thoughts can occur. Stop this. Stop this mind. And we think, how can I stop this mind? Stop it, mind. Stop it. Not stopping. Stop it. No. Then, can we ever stop this mind from all its nonsensical thoughts that occur again and again? Can it be stopped? No, it cannot be stopped. It must be filled. When the mind is empty, when the mind is a big empty space, then it automatically fills up. It automatically fills up with all kinds of material things because we are still conditioned souls. Then automatically it fills up with thoughts of sense gratification. The mind must become filled with endless thought of Krishna, endless activity for Krishna, and there should be no space. no space at all. It should be so packed, so just like a very, like when you fly on Ryanair and you pack your suitcase, right? And you have 15 crummy kilos, right? And you have to somehow or other get it all in there, in your hand luggage, I mean, you know? Huh? It's like your check-in bag is the 15 kilos and your hand luggage is 30, right? And it's just like so densely packed, you know? It's like that. No space. No space at all, right? No space. So no space in our consciousness. The idle mind is the devil's workshop, Srila Prabhupada said. That means that if there's any space...
What's going on with you, Prabhu? You look so spaced out.
Yeah, so spaced out. It means that there is obviously a lot of space, right? That one is... that one is not full of thoughts or full of thoughts related to Krishna. See, yeah, but that's very difficult, you know. How can I always think of Krishna? Well, take some responsibility for Krishna, right? Because that forces you to think of Krishna. If you have to organize Janmashtami, if you're one of the main organizers and you got the list of 733 things that you have to do before Janmashtami. You even dream about it at night, right? The list. Your bed sheet turns into the list. It could be quite an experience. But then even the nightmare is Krishna conscious, right? And better a Krishna conscious nightmare than a sweet Maya dream. So in this way, we must really become absorbed. Becoming absorbed is not some merely mental exercise. Oh yes, it is that also. We have austerity of speech, austerity of the body, and austerity of the mind. So on these three levels, we must be absorbed. We must be absorbed on the level of the body. We must be absorbed on the level of the mind. And we must be absorbed on the level of speech. Then we can gradually bring it to the point that there's no space. No space. And then it's difficult for the material thoughts to enter. Srila Prabhupada speaks on that. Somehow or other, by an arrangement of Sisi Radha Gokulananda, it was here in the Bhaktivedanta manner that I received sannyas from my spiritual master. That is the time when obviously one is getting serious. It's about spiritual life. It says etamsa staya paratmanista. It is, one must be very firmly fixed on wanting to only serve Krishna. So in the renounced spirit, I had come with Euro lines, you know. I come by with Euro lines and the boat. Right? So I was also going back with the boat. And as I was on the boat, I was on the... on the deck. It was in May, it was decent weather, and I was looking at the North Sea, and I was thinking, Apuryamanam achala pratistam apasamudra pravisanti yatvatvatkamaya pravisanti sarve shashanti abnuti nakamakami. That metaphor of all the rivers flowing into the ocean compared to endless desires flowing into the consciousness. But because the consciousness is so full of Krishna, all these rivers have no effect. So that was my meditation, and it was all nice and transcendental on the deck of the ship until the boat landed in France, and the first thing the French custom officers did was they said I had a false passport and they confiscated my dunda. You have to be renounced, you know. Krishna was telling me, right? Now, Krishna was telling me, you have to be really renounced. Okay. So, that is a fact. Tesam evanukam partam aham agyana jamtamaha nasiyami atmabhavastu jnana dipena basvatam. Krishna is there within the heart and making arrangements within the heart with the shining lamp of knowledge. Thank God. Wherever we fall short in our endeavors, in sadhana bhakti, in our endeavors to fill our consciousness completely, and where we are leaving some space for material thoughts and material desires to enter, there Krishna makes arrangements for our purification. I had the fight of my life to get that danda back. I got it eventually, but they kept us there till late at night and made sure we missed the last bus, so we had to walk from the border post, and so on. And of course, they took us off the Euroline bus and so on. And it was a whole trip and a half. Merci beaucoup. Merci beaucoup for the purification, right? That I got there and then. And I could see that ultimately Krishna is behind everything. And I could see that Krishna was teaching me. And that is what is going on. If we are not ourselves taking shelter of the process, then Krishna is teaching. Then Krishna will teach us. The only thing is, how will Krishna teach us? Sometimes Krishna is known as Vajrat Apikatura, or hard as a thunderbolt, and at the same time soft as a rose. So he can sometimes purify us and give us some real inspiration, some real nectar, and other times he may give us a thunderbolt, and that is therefore maybe better, after all, to go for the voluntary surrender. That's what I thought after I flew out of the car with 90 kilometers an hour and had the experience, I am flying. And I landed on the part that we normally sit on, and I didn't sit for quite a while after that. What can we say? Of course, I was fortunate Krishna protected me, because instead of breaking the spine, I broke the bone right below it. If I would have broken the spine, then now it would be a wheel in the Swami program. Right, and I would have a website called Swami on Wheels, which, you know, could also work, but still I appreciate that I can do a few dance steps. So Krishna was there, but Krishna also taught me. When Krishna teaches in that way, generally the experience is Purna Musik above. Which means be a mouse again. We know the story. Mouse was not happy, met yogi, wanted to be cat, no problem, so be it. Mouse became cat. Cat was not happy because of dog. Cat wanted to become dog. Dog was not happy because of tiger, and dog became tiger. Tiger looked at the yogi, licked his lips. Yogi said, what you want? Tiger said, I am hungry. And said, yogi, you want to eat me? Yes. Then Purna Musik above. Then become a mouse again. So in the material world, too often, too often we become a mouse again. Have you noticed? I have become a mouse many times in my life. Yes, both in my material life and in and also during my spiritual life. And I know by now, since I've gone through it many times, here we go again. Okay, it's the mouse again. Right. And we play, and we have to again be reduced in our powers, just when the false pride was rising. Okay, Krishna takes it away, and for a while sit on the bench while the match is being played. Yeah, and in this and there, we can realize that we are not the doer, that actually we depend on the mercy of Krishna. Each time when we have a little success, we become proud, and then when we are reduced to a mouse once again, then we realize, no, actually, I'm totally dependent on Krishna. And it is this mood of total dependence that brings one, and at the same time, absorption in always trying to serve Krishna, that brings us to the point where we break through and come to the level of higher taste, come to the point of appreciating the endless, amazing qualities of Krishna, and gradually love will develop. And then one can become like Prahlad, totally absorbed. It is possible. Prahlad is interesting because he was the son of the demons. Right? So you cannot say that Prahlad had a very high birth, and he had a, you know, he grew up in the Gurukul, and he was born in Vrindavan, and he had, you know, and everything was auspicious. No. Prahlad, they tried to brainwash him. They tried to break his spirit. So he didn't have a favorable birth. But nonetheless, he attained success. So all of us who also didn't have a favorable birth can take courage from Prahlad's situation. We can also attain that level if we take advantage of the mercy as I described it in this lecture. The main theme of this lecture was how to take advantage of the mercy. That was actually the main point. I was trying to give examples of how to take advantage of the mercy so that we can reach that state, attain that state that Prahlad attained. Then I'll stop. Any question? Any comment?